It's a rather philosophical talk, so I guess I'm not very used to give these kind of talks. As you will see, there are two very different battlefields. The first one is much more on the edge, because it will try to work. So, first of all, I'm going to motivate the problem, basically. We are interested in understanding information laws. The relation between the fuzzball picture that some people make up for fuzzballs versus the standard semi-logical picture. That I guess I will spend some minutes on. And then I will jump ahead and I will try to the questions that will appear here. I will try to ask them in the context of the AES safety correspondence, and in particular in the context of large inflation black holes. One could be more generic, you could be considering the problem of dating black holes. It's a completely general discussion because the question of information loss conveniently described with the boundary condition in AES, which is not the same as in the Minkowski space. It is a generic one. I will focus on this, but if I remember, I will mention the obvious differences when there are other quantum numbers. It will become apparent, I think. As you can imagine, or at least the string theory audience here, any attempt to make any statement about large black holes using AES-CFT is something that you need to be very brave. I don't consider myself very brave, so I will try to suggest certain ideas. I would be very glad to receive your constructive criticism about them. But in the last months, there has been some progress, at least from a formal point of view, in the understanding. What I mean by formal is that it may not have interesting phenomenological consequences that I'm sure of. But theoretically, there has been an understanding of the 1-hour GPS sector of N equals 4 supernumeraries. Now, even though I am aware that there are no 1-hour supersymmetric black holes in AES, it's true that there is this superstar configuration in which, at least the opinion that I have about it is that if you would add any small perturbation to that configuration, you will get a finite horizon, and some of the discussions that you have here will be natural. So I will use this as a toy model to explore some of the ideas that we will all agree are much more on the edge in this general setup. And I hope that we will be able to learn from. We will learn something in this sector, and I'm trying to convince myself that some of our ideas could survive when applying to that case. And if I have time, I will try to summarize. But I would also like to raise a very natural question that comes to mind when one analyzes these 2 points. So this would be formalizing out of the outline. Let's succeed. So let me start by just reminding ourselves what some people call the information loss paradox. Basically, if you have a Penrose diagram that describes the collapse of some other distribution into a black hole, the problem is that you could start with a pure state, and the observer at infinity typically will not be able to measure. The problem is that this quantum state can collapse into a black hole. And this is our standard semi-classical picture of the black hole, associate the black hole with some kind of thermodynamical object in which there is a horizon that surrounds some region of space-time that apparently we don't have access to. And basically, the main question is how can this observer learn about the quantum state that generated this model? In AGS, the discussion is slightly different because in a flat space, black holes can evaporate. There is Hawking radiation. Typically, this is what you can formulate the paradox in terms of the Hawking radiation. In AGS, the boundary, the geometry generates an effective potential, so the realization can be in equilibrium with the black hole, the original equilibrium state. But I would like to compare this standard picture, let me call it semi-classical. Please, if people cannot see, just I will try to write in this way. I know that my handwriting is not very clear. Typically, in the standard semi-classical approach, you have the picture that there is a horizon, finite size, or at least I'm going to focus on this kind of what. And this horizon surrounds some internal space that in principle we all have access to. But in the recent years, following the ideas of Mathur, Moonin, and follow-ups, there has been another picture to it in which the main idea, or the one that there are many things to mention of course about this very nice work, the main idea that I would like to emphasize here is that you replace the black hole and this horizon picture with some sort of black hole picture. And more importantly for the way which I'm going to try to explain myself, you are going to try to think of the black hole, or let me say the quantum state that describes this black hole, as a pure state. And so one might argue that the black hole itself, the honest to God quantum state of the black hole, is a pure state. There is no information paradox in any case, because you start with a pure state, it collapses to another one. But even though some people might be happy with this answer, I still believe that there is a question associated with the fact that in the semi-classical approximation, we know that black holes have a certain entropy. And in the microcanonical understanding of this semi-classical description, this is associated with some degeneracy of the states. What this is telling you is that even if you believe that the black hole is described by a pure state, there is a huge degeneracy of the states accounting for the entropy of this black hole. And so even if you might be willing to accept that you are evading the paradox, the question remains as how could an observer at infinity be able to disentangle among the different quantum states in which your black hole could be. So, call it information loss paradox or not, the question that I have just asked, I believe it's a non-existent question. In a more theoretical language, if you want, doing the work of Mathur and Moonin and all follow-ups, let's assume that we work with a horizon, with a black hole that has a horizon, or with a stretch horizon. Many people have been able to find many configurations in the supersymmetric regime, at least, in which you are indeed trying to give evidence that the semi-classical description of black holes with a horizon is actually being replaced by some other geometrical description in which, very far away from what the initial horizon stood, the geometry is nearly the same, except for the fact that at infinity you would be able to measure dipole moments which somehow know about the resolution of this structure here. But when you start going and you try to probe more and more internal smaller scales in the geometry of your spacetime, you replace this forbidden region of the horizon by some more geometry. Yeah, please.
Now, that conclusion is right in the asymptotic black space.
Which conclusion, sorry?
You just said that instead of just having the monopoles being the things that you measure far away, which is what the black hole no head theorem
yes.
says.
Yes.
If you have no black hole, you don't have no head theorem, even in four dimensions.
Yes.
So, you know, yeah, the dipole moments and other things, they fall off much faster.
That's right.
If you have an asymptotically flat space,
so right.
like an ADS,
yes.
multipoles don't fall off. Like
you do in class, right? Yeah, I agree with that, but I guess, well, maybe I should have mentioned this. I guess that I am a person in the community that, even though I am aware of the difficulties of pushing this problem in the non-supersymmetric case associated with, you know, radiation and all this, so the stability of this configuration is not obvious at all. But I am actually...
Well, actually, the BDS ones, it's guaranteed by
6%. Exactly. No, this is what I'm trying to emphasize, that most of my comments are going to try to explore the fuzzy picture, even in ADS asymptotic boundary conditions, so the story is different, but even in the non-supersymmetric regime. I really like a lot the question that I guess Samir and Oli ask themselves, which is, if you really trust the semi-classical description that we've been all learning in GR books, you associate an entropy, and if you ask yourself with current an entropy from a geometrical point of view, that's a question that, as far as I understand, nobody can answer. These guys are providing this picture, maybe in the non-supersymmetric case, they are wrong. I'm going to try to explore in the ADS CFT what could play the role of these smooth geometries, and how is it that using a dual description, which of course I'm going to be on the edge, as I already said, what is the phenomenon in the dual formulation for these black holes that is going to tell you why there is an effective temperature in the game, even though you are working with pure space all the time, because these are the rules that I'm going to try to push.
One of the parts of the fuzzball program that I find intriguing, other than the claim that the microspace can be represented as a gravity regime,
yes.
which one of the outrageous claims that I thought of,
yes.
but suppose you take large n with all the quantum numbers in the problem, then hopefully you can show that parametrically speaking, you know, whatever. So if we put that part aside and say, even if we believe that there are non-BPS fuzzballs and all this, which is a big jump,
basically,
the technology of fuzzballs, even today, with all the interesting results that have come out and so forth. But
actually, on Monday, I think there was a paper by Simon Roland collaborators claiming that they have no supersymmetric D1 required for PWX configurations being smooth. So in an interesting direction, but I agree with you, it's far from obvious.
The second thing that's far from obvious to me about the first program, I mean, I got interested in it probably because, is how the averaging over these microstate geometries increases the horizon.
Yes.
And that would be the same phenomenon that gives rise to the effect of the existence of a Hawking temperature and so forth. And I'd like to see an honest-to-God actual calculation of that.
I think I agree with you that there is no honest to God computation giving evidence for that. I am also terribly interested in that question. I can tell you probably what most of the people have told you when you ask this question, which is that in the gravity side, clearly the problem with that is that there is diffeomorphism in variables. And so if you want to count, you need to have some description of the theory in which you are able, in some sort of modulized phase approximation, to count how many of these curves in the supercube language are doing the counting for you. If you just take a classical space-time perspective where there are diffeomorphisms, I honestly don't know how to do it.
Well, in string theory,
we
ought to be able to do that on our calculations. Now that diffeomorphism is very study of all energy symmetry.
I agree with you, but I'm afraid I'm not going to answer that question today. I wish I could.
This is somewhat related to Amanda's question, I guess. Are you saying that when a star collapses, say a supersymmetric model star or something collapses, that the region inside the horizon is not the geometry we think in the semi-classical picture? It's completely different? And if so, how could that possibly... How could that? Well, but there could be something that sort of geometrically is like the horizon for a while. But are you? I mean, where does the semi-classical picture break down? At the horizon, just outside, near the singularity, or where? Because Well, not that we're thinking earlier than that. It's very hard.
It is. I guess the natural answer is what Amanda was already pointing out, which is that I mean, in principle, my take on this is that the semi-classical picture is not breaking down
at all.
I mean, you are having a solution of a classical effective theory that we have always been known to be a black hole, and now this picture has been challenged.
Yeah.
There are singularities, so why are you going to believe this solution if there is a singularity and the effective description breaks down? At the horizon, certainly, there is no reason as far as I understand that this semi-classical description
would be very good. The question was in the context of supersymmetric models, that collapse you cannot realize in the context of supersymmetric models.
No.
You would not. You cannot. So that question. So
why not?
But the counting arguments and the enumeration arguments.
Sure, that's
all. Geometry. They will take you away from. You know, if you are doing collapse. Then you will be exciting modes during the collapse, which are not powered to which place is spectral.
Well, perhaps one way to rephrase the question is to say there are black holes and there are fuzzballs, but we don't yet have any photodynamical information about whether fuzzballs have a basin of attraction of initial conditions in any gravitational collapse. We don't know that these fuzzballs are actually the endpoints of any kind of gravitational collapse. So,
following your philosophy, I understand that you are still willing to keep the standard semi-classical picture. You are taking more.
I think the conjecture is bold and interesting, and it's gone further than it should have by any ways, in some ways. And so I want to know where it breaks down, if it does.
I mean, this is part of our motivation. I mean, I think that all I'm going to try to do, I mean, in the 150th sector, by the way, even though we will not be talking about black holes, most of these questions can be answered to as much detail as you want, because the quantum theory is believed to be fully understood. There is a sort of a logic theory in which you should be able to compute whatever you want, and you should know which state you are interested in. And then there is the very nice piece of work of Ellerland that even though they don't establish the one-to-one dictionary, and this is part of my talk, establishing a relation between give me a quantum state, what is the corresponding geometry in the Ellerland picture. If you manage to establish that dictionary as a toy model, and of course I'm in supersymmetry again, so I'm not going to address the important questions. But this is a setup in which you can ask, let's consider two quantum states, two very complicated coherent states of M fermions, which differ statistically very little, and I will try to emphasize on that. If you manage to establish a dictionary with LLM, then you can ask the question, at which scale in the space-time geometry do these two quantum states that differ very little in the statistical terms, which I'm going to define, how do these differences show up in geometry, at which scale, and more importantly, how are you going to tell apart, because typically you would expect that the differences are on a Planck scale, how are you going to tell apart these two geometries, which is a question I'm not going to do the averaging for you, even though there will be an average computation that I would be very happy to discuss with anyone. But I'm unable to do better than this right now. I share your concern. I'm also very interested in knowing whether this breaks down or not and why. Please, many questions are welcome. This is a topic in which everybody has something to say. So I'm just expressing myself in front of you. Okay, so I guess that this introduction has taken a long time. So let me insist, in case I didn't do it, that I am certainly trying to push the idea that black holes are described by pure states, and it is the degeneracy of these pure states and in the possible picture that will account for the entropy of the black holes. The question of whether in all situations these quantum states are honest to God described by a classical geometrical space time is a question that I'm not going to address. But in a quantum picture, you can always try to attempt to take the idea that a black hole is described by a field state, and this is the one I'm going to take when I will go to the area 60. Okay. Do I have to say this?
So which area 60 is it, or does it not matter?
I want to be in five dimensions, so n equals 1 super n equals 1 black hole. Yeah, let me be more explicit. And if I forgot to say something, it will appear less. So I guess I would like to emphasize once again that in this business, if you take the picture of pure black holes, one important question for us is going to be, if you have a setup in which you would be able to have a full control of what the quantum states are, if you are willing to challenge this picture, it's a natural question in the quantum theory to ask, how are you going to tell apart two different states that have the right quantum number to describe this pure semi-classical picture of the black hole? So that's a question that I would like all of you to have in mind, because this is driving this process. And in my opinion, it's related to what Amanda was asking about how we do the averaging of geometries. Well, in the case of the Matur problem, there are some solutions you can already analyze how difficult it could be actually doing measurements to tell about two of the non-singular configurations that they put down. I mean, we know that there are dipoles, but how we do differentiate the two space-time geometry, that's a very difficult separation. And this is what I'm going to try to argue, that you can save this in a classical picture. But let's not advance the universe at this pace, I will not finish tomorrow.
Does that depend on your isotope, your ideas isotopes?
I must say that I have not thought about asymptotically flat, because in that case, well, actually, we could. As far as I know, I'm not aware that it depends on the boundary conditions. But again, the formulation of the information paradox itself is different in flat space than in ABS.
Yes, so the multifolds fall off in that flat space, but they don't.
Exactly. We could talk about that. I have not thought, you know.
I can try and catch that.
Absolutely. So, I guess I was planning to review some basic features of the large black hole that I'm going to have in mind. I know that some of you know this much better than me. Mm-hmm. Let me just write down some expressions in case that the people are not aware they can follow. I will not even write down any metric. It's not necessary. Let's assume that we know that metric. What I want to emphasize is that for a large B equals 5 and plus black hole in asymptotically ABS, what I want to emphasize is that the horizon radius scales like L. I'm going to denote L when many people denote the radius of ABS. Just to write a little bit less. And its mass goes like some parameter of the solution, which I'm going to specify in a second, times the effect of bidimensional Newton. Remember that I am in type 2D. So even though I'm talking about a five-dimensional configuration, you should understand that this is a black hole in five dimensions times a finite sphere, so there are the corresponding fluxes that make this stable. And remember that I'm not going to talk about the small black hole, because the small black holes don't satisfy the property, and they are unstable, and so they have physics for their own.
Does that say R is black hole?
Yeah, it is an L, but
what's on the left-hand side of the equation?
This is the radius of the horizon.
Ah, okay. And R not is something different?
Yeah, R0 is basically the math parameter in the solution. Yeah. I will just try to avoid writing the next thing to save some time. Please.
Yeah, so just two questions. These are positive black holes.
These ones, yes. Yes, small black hole has negative specific field, and this is related to its instability. Yeah.
Right. But are these known to have singularities and so forth?
Singularities in the sense that the now the horizon, there is a singularity there.
These
guys have finite horizon area, so the entropy will be different from zero. And if you drop that dimension, you reach a singularity.
You're in a Hawking page?
Yeah, exactly. That's these are the matter of, yeah, indeed.
Half black space or good black hole, depending on the mass here.
Now, let me just remind that using the ADS-CFT dictionary, this radius of ADS, if I forget about pi and pi to the 2, is the string coupling LS to the 4 times n. N basically is the number of grains of this flux that keeps this S5 from collapse. That's what you should keep in mind. Or, if you are a more theoretical person, n is the n that appears in the edge you engage through in the rule of theory. Just for completeness, remember that the Young-Mohs coupling is just GS. Okay, so one observation that personally I've known for a while, but I don't know deeply what it means, if there is any meaning, is the fact that if I work in the gravity regime, and I compute the area of the horizon, and I use Hawking's formula to compute the entropy of this black hole. The entropy of the black hole is the area divided by the five-dimensional Newton's constant, and when you use the dictionary to express everything in terms of fundamental quantities, the answer that you get up to order one numbers is n squared. And this n squared is precisely the mass up to order one numbers. I would like just to emphasize, in case somebody has an idea or has thought about it, I don't understand why this entropy is independent of the string coupling, for instance.
You know, one way to think about it is just consider even just drawing your map of black holes that are also familiar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you know that the entropy is 2 pi times the square root, and then there's some integers underneath the square root.
Yes.
Nowhere does the string coupling appear. And the physical reason for that
is
that even though the minimum constant has gs squared on the bottom line of the formula, the area of the horizon for the Strominger-Bachel black holes is proportional to gs squared. And so they cancel each other.
I don't know. I understand that.
People say it's independence of the entropy from the moduli.
I get that the only remark I can make at this point, I mean, it's a very naive remark, but at some point we will be facing trying to give, to say some sensible words about the dual description of this. And then we know that due to the correspondence itself, you are facing a strong coupling problem in the Gauge theory. But the counting of states, maybe because these are just the states, and maybe it's as simple as that. It's not renormalizing. I mean, this number doesn't seem to change. While the operators that are going to describe your quantum states in the possible picture, certainly they are going to mix like math, and their conformal dimensions are going to. So there is something, maybe along the line that the entropy is something that only knows about something that is in mind, but clearly, this is a quantity that apparently you would claim that it's not renormalizing. I don't know.
There will be G-string corrections to that, which you can calculate, you know, Malone development.
Exactly, including final order corrections.
They turn down by one over n, so that there are strings of zero in the n goes to infinity limit.
Okay.
That's technically a reason, I think, why the entropy, I mean, the business that is goes like n squared was, I thought, first noticed by.
I don't know, I'm not clearly on the first one. I'm just claiming that I don't understand why this is the case, but maybe it's very simple. I mean, I know that
technically. In the most obvious case, I think technically it's not that obvious. But.
Okay. Where are we? So, just written down these formulas from here. You can learn that the conformal dimension that, in principle, your operator should look like has to be of order n squared. it wouldn't be because of mixing effects.
And that the degeneracy of the states that you are looking for is of the order of e to the n squared, is of the entropy scale of like n squared. Now, if you are, let's compare these numbers just to appreciate the difference with between this object in black hole itself, the semi-classical picture of the black hole, sorry, with other natural stringy probes that you could consider. So, for instance, if you consider, let's compare these numbers with, for instance, well, with supergravity mode, well, in that case, this is an order one conformal dimension. Now imagine that you consider a little string, and I try to estimate that its energy goes like 1 over L s, and from here I extract some conformal dimension. This goes like, since I didn't introduce this for coupling, let me write it like this. So I just want to emphasize the difference in the power of n, but also the dependence in the string up in this case. So that's the natural conformal dimension that you could try to get some intuition if I could use a little string probing this black hole. Or let me ask the following question. What is the corresponding pure state that would describe in the AES 60 correspondent a little string doing some scattering processing
out? Do you mean technically a little string, or do you mean a small string? As in little string theory? As in the log of the
SI,
for instance? You mean that little string?
Yeah, I mean a small, yeah, a little string.
You mean a small?
Yeah.
Because little string theory is something simpler.
No, I'm not saying anything about it.
Because we call it a small string, or a mean string.
No. So, notice, yeah, so the tension is given by alpha square root of the power of 1.
Yeah.
And another famous object in this story is a giant gravitor, or maybe some people would just prefer to call it a brain. In that case, you know, these are objects that typically are supersymmetric, and these go like n. So there is a huge difference here.
So now what you mentioned is there is a big difference, right? So you at this stage you were talking about black holes which are neutral. In other words, they just have a temperature. Now, I don't think what relevance the last thing you mentioned has to do, because those are state-level charges, while your black hole is...
Okay, that's a very good point. I guess that one of the reasons why I mentioned this is because in the 1/2 BPS story, even though there are no black holes, I'm going to try to analyze what is the subspace of quantum states in the Hilbert space of conformal dimension n squared, just because of this fact, even though in the 1/2 BPS story there are no. And then the different powers of n, I mean, in that case, n gravitons, we know whether they are charged. And the fact that there is a power of n of difference, it will be important for my answers. But I agree that in the case that I'm...
But in principle, there is nothing that would prohibit you to just say that you will look at a black hole, which in addition to temperature, has a chemical...
Absolutely.
And that would be a much closer... I would say that the analogy would be much closer to the giant gravitons in those cases, you know, to a quarter of black hole.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks. Okay, so... Here goes when we will try to put ourselves on the edge. I give a kind of like this. So let us try to be open-minded. So basically, if you look at this blackboard and what is written down there, one of the first questions that we should all ask is, how do the pure quantum states that we are talking about look like in the dual description? And at this point we know that in principle what these states know about is about a non-trivial statement about a strongly coupled dual. But I'm going to try to argue that in the limit in which n is very big, when you are in n equals 4 super young nils, all gauging minor operators are necessarily have to be built out of, and let me start using the word alphabet, out of an alphabet which is composed of the different fields, scalar, gauge fields, whatever, that you have in any goes of superior mills, and derivative thereof. Okay. So there is a finite alphabet built out of the field content of your theory and the derivatives. Now, when you ask the question, what happens with these operators, or how do they look like, I would like to argue that since you meet, due to the SUN constraints that appear inside the traces, you can, if you think of writing a trace which is just a combination of x and tau up to, so, n squared conformal dimension, this can be decomposed. This is the rule that I want to have in mind. I will always decompose this operator into the linear independent ones, which involve operators of conformal dimension smaller than n. So I'm not going to allow this kind of operator to be written down, because it's equivalent to a linear combination of other ones. That's what I'm going to try to say. Now, having in mind these SUN constraints, since you need to get to operators of conformal dimension n squared, typically the picture that you are going to try to push is that you are going to deal with very long operators. And what I mean by long operators is that typically you are going to have products of traces of all sorts of stuff. So there are many of these operators that you can write down. And so when you ask the question, how do they look like, it is a question about how can I characterize these distributions of operators in any possible means. And the way to have tried to get some information out of here is we have reminded ourselves that in information theory, people have tried to work out the answer to very similar questions to this one, once you have managed to ask the question in this language. If I give you an alphabet of symbols, which in this case would be given by the fields and the derivatives, and you ask yourself, what is the generic word that you can write down using this finite alphabet, there are theorems in information theory that provide partial answers. Please.
That there is an implicit assumption here, and the implicit assumption, because there is another way how you get large conformal dimensions. One is that, so you're assuming that the large conformal dimensions counts as a large number of fields which have a small classical dimension. But the other way, and that's probably what we know happens in non-supersymmetric examples, when there are large anomalous dimensions. So in that case, I would not say that, you know, that I need large number of fields. I might need a state which is non-supersymmetric, classical, which has small dimension, but develop a huge anomalous dimension.
I'm afraid I don't have anything to say about that, except for the fact that I don't know. I mean, it's in this issue of well, you are completely right. The question is how typical this is. And I don't know how to answer the question in this particular subsector of operators, which I am aware there could be huge anomalous dimensions. So I'm going to try to focus on the subsector of operators that to begin with they were wrong, and I'm going to try to apply statistical techniques to deal with that. In order to address that question, which of course is relevant, one would need, and I really honest to work on how to do it, one would need to get some way of answering the question, how typical that is. If there is a way of convincing me, at least, that the number of operators in your finger space for which this phenomenon happens is, in some statistical sense, that one has to be very precise, atypical, then this would follow. But otherwise, we are missing those operators. I mean, this this is the problem of dealing with non-supersymmetric scenarios.
I guess you will restrict, say more a little bit about the charges, specify the alphabet of the conflict.
What I'm going to say is that in the case in which the only charge that is covered, which is that the alphabet is written down, in which you only come from polynomial dimension. This means that the R charges are zero, and all the speeds if you want are zero. In that case, I need to analyze the problem. Well, this is what characterizes your problem in symbol theory, let's say. If you would be in the, this is the case, this is what I wanted to mention before.
Okay.
I will come to that. The only difference, as you say, is that if you are willing to describe all the black holes, you need to change correspondingly what is the ensemble in which you are working. If you want to use ensemble ideas. In the one half with the effect of something, I'm going to work in a very well defined canonical ensemble with some much more effective temperature. So, I think.
You want to start with a more micro-canonical approach and then show that there is a thing called a temperature and it can be defined.
So, what I'm going to do is, in the generic case, in which in any case it's difficult to make exact statements, I'm going to use a couple of theorems in information theory, characterizing for me what is the typical form of an operator, leaving aside the operators that evade this long operator kind of guy. And another theorem that is going to provide for me a characterization of deviations from this typical operator. Because that's also important if you want to start comparing things. Now, in the one half BPS story, just advancing a little bit because we probably run out of time. In the one half BPS story, since you have a system of n fermions whose quantum states are perfectly well defined, what we decided to do was to work in a fictitious canonical ensemble in which you are summing over all the energies, not necessarily over the delta equal n squared. But if you allow yourself to send n to infinity, which in the canonical ensemble is equivalent to taking the thermodynamical limit, the results that you are going to get for the average answers and the fluctuations over those average answers in the large limits should agree with the micro canonical analysis. So that's what we will want the most. But the canonical ensemble, I will only use it in the one half BPS to get an answer for what is the typical form of a Young tableau, for instance, describing a state of n fermions having a conformal image. And the temperature will be fixed by requiring that the average energy is n squared.
I don't have a complaint. It's just so if you are not going to, it's very interesting, so you will not get time to talk about it because.
The one of the BS. Well, I will be here until Friday. So. No, but I think we can still have this platform.
Okay. It's
or we need to do. Okay. Sorry. If people is more interested in the 100-year story, of course, we can switch gears. I mean, it's much cleaner than the generic discussion. I'm just trying to. Please.
Just a bit, I don't see what's wrong with the canonical ensemble as long as they have a positive specific
usage. I don't know.
Isn't that like introducing what you're trying to prove? It's like introducing a temperature and then averaging, assuming that temperature is held roughly fixed. And then summing over all entities with your canonical function. Haven't you sort of introduced what you're trying to prove?
No, not necessarily, because I'm going to use the canonical ensemble only to learn about how the average form of my operators look like in the 1000 years.
Okay. I guess can you, since if you're not gonna, can you just mention what will be what you call a temperature in half BPS?
Okay. Let's ask the same question in the 1000 years story. Okay. Now, Okay, so let's switch gears. So let me try to put on the last one. Yeah, here is the quick. So imagine that I focus on this as a toy model of these kind of ideas. So in the rule of field theory, so CFT, we know that there are these fermions. I'm not going to explain too much about them. There are many bases that you could use to describe the state of your theory. And I mentioned this because in the other picture, some bases are very naturally suited to describe the rings that appear in their geometries. Whereas the kind of objects that probably I am more interested in when there is less symmetry are not rings. So the main picture that I would like to give is that if you have some set of concentric rings, I would like to associate this, as it was already said in several papers, I would like to describe this with the pure state described in terms of the number state basis of the fermions in your harmonic symmetry. But if you want to describe some random distribution, and I'm using these words to try to connect with the previous language of spectrals of energies, spectrals of charge in the element picture, I'm going to use a basis of coherent states, because coherent states are objects which carry finite energy and which are localized in a certain point of configuration space. So if I want to capture this in some semi-classical limit, I'm going to use coherent states. And coherent states, remember, are overcomplete, they are non-orthogonal, but in the semi-classical limit, if the distance in modalization of two coherent states is a little bit more far above than the square root of h value of your problem, they are effectively orthogonal. Okay, now, trying to go as fast as I can.
So are you saying you know that in the Engels confinity limit, the coherent states are actually a basis?
No. Okay. Coherent states are always amazing. It's just that they are overcomplete. And I'm just saying that generically, if I take two coherent states,
I just use the wrong terminology.
This is different from zero. And I'm only emphasizing the fact, because the connection with element requires a semi-classical limit. I am emphasizing that if I take the h bar zero limit of this normalization condition, you will discover that if these two coherent states are localized and separated at a distance larger than the square root of h bar, they are effectively in the semi-classical limit of formula, which is the picture that I want to have in mind. I want to have a distribution of blocks in the LLM geometry which are far apart already in the semi-classical limit, so they are satisfied. So in that limit, coherent state will be effectively orthogonal. Now, so another picture that I would like to emphasize is that remember that in the LLM work, this point where there is charge, from the point of view of the full 10-dimensional geometry, this corresponds to locally of points in which different three spheres are shrinking to zero size. So this is describing a space-time of a complicated geometry, of a complicated topology also. And concerning the question of how do different quantum states, which are fully described by a choice or by linear combinations of states using these basis, or linear combinations using these basis, if you ask the question how different are these geometries and these states in their corresponding geometrical description, it's important to keep in mind what is controlling the scale of these distances. Because we already know, even before starting the exercise, that very far away from where these sources are located, the geometry of the LLM picture is basically governed by the multiple moments associated with the charge distribution that appear in one equal vector.
I'm a little bit confused by you pulling to those large states, because any distribution, generic distribution, like you said, will be time dependent, right? So we'll give rise to a Pauli geometry which is not time independent. So why that? Well, the only time independent solution for generic Feynman distributions are those where you have additional healing cylinder, those are concentric structures. Mm-hmm. Those are only time independent. If you have blobs without, you know, some additional Riemann symmetry, then you can show that the solution is time dependent in n dimensions.
Okay.
So it's not in a 5 dimension, it's a leaf, the 10 dimensional leaf. Well, so it's not
like the geometry.
The geometry is not set. So then what do I mean by a state in that sense? And maybe just some evolving.
Well, I get that in the phase space picture, these blobs are, you wouldn't be telling me that they are moving around, because the wave function of this state has a time dependence.
And in that
case, you will get again a
constant. Yeah, in the phase, you are right, you can see this even in the phase.
Yeah.
Okay. So those are not, that's not what I would say an eigenstate, which is a Hamiltonian forever.
Okay.
That's a crucial thing I would need. So if I need to do averaging or something.
Okay, no, I think that's a good point. And I think I would agree with that. In the phase space picture, indeed, when you take into account the time dependence of the wave function, you will generate that.
Yeah, this is not.
And then you come back to that kind of.
Yeah, that's the only thing you can do, and then. But you're still going to tell us what the time.
Yeah, I'm going to. So, let's see if you agree with this way of trying to extract some information. So, he was pointing out that this, what I call here a coherent state, actually these are time, well, first of all, they would correspond to time dependent solutions in space.
But
from the point of view of the state, the wave function has a time dependent exponential that controls. So if you represent these states in some classical phase space picture, these blobs are going to rotate in this plane. Oh, so what was your question then?
My question more is, somehow physically, have you gone to the average over this time dependence, or?
No. The coherent state story we didn't understood, actually. We have understood the picture of rings, so I'm even happy about it pointing out that. Yeah. I'm going to try to add myself. What is the, so if you have a set of n fermions, strictly speaking, each fermion is associated with a very tiny ring whose weight is equal to h bar. I'm going to try to ask myself, what is the generic state? So the question is, what is the generic state of conformal dimension of order n squared using fermions which are sitting in pure states? And in order to try to answer that question, I'm going to focus in the limit in which n is going to infinity. I will introduce a fictitious canonical ensemble. In which, by definition, as you know, I am summing over all the energies, not only the ones that I am interested in. But in this canonical ensemble, you are working at a fixed temperature.
In the phase space. The temperature you introduce for the fermions in the phase space.
Well, not necessarily in the phase space. I'm literally working with n fermions at finite temperature.
But how that's different from the state of the dialogue? There was a paper where I wrote a paper where I discussed exactly this picture of fermion ring and infinite chemical potential for those fermion pumps, which the chemical potential there corresponds to the chemical.
I see. I'm really sorry, I was not aware of that. So you did introduce a canonical instance?
Yeah, I was talking exactly this, so that's the states which are in, and that I was claiming that canonical ensemble for the finite corresponds to the geometry which we should interpret as including that geometry in the target space. Okay. However, that thing does not work for some reasons.
Okay.
But the paper, the way the paper is written, there is this claim in the phrase.
I see. I'm really sorry. I really don't know.
But is that what you...
Well, what I'm going to do is... I'm going to compute, well, the partition function for this system, and I'm going to require that the average energy has to be n squared, and this is what is going to fix.
Yeah, in fact, I mean, it was a distribution and
it's
yeah,
so this
I see. It was coupled data after LLM.
I see. I don't know about it.
Okay, anyway. Sure.
No. I'm sorry, I really don't know, otherwise I wouldn't have told you, of course, or I wouldn't have been known. I see, I'm sorry. So maybe I should ask Alex to
No.
So I guess that for, since this part was done by Alex, the only thing that I would like to try to so basically if we take this analysis from Alex's work, what we will learn is we will learn if I associate to any state Ayan Carlot, if this state is, as you know, is characterized by the excitations over the corresponding frequency. This is given by a set of integers, and then this set of integers is mapped into a set of forces. Out of this effective canonical ensemble, once you have fixed the temperature and working in a certain in this particular conformal relation because of the black hole inspiration set, you will learn what is the average shape of the corresponding number, because you can compute the average number of boxes that each fermion has. Now, you can compute the average number of boxes, and also the variance in this average number of boxes. And you can use the connection with the geometry developing in LLM to associate these data with the rings, internal and external rings of the space picture, and then you can associate with the deviations. What I mean by deviations is variance. You can associate scales in a space time. And once you have developed this dictionary, then you can go to the previous part of all discussion, and you can ask, well, what kind of physical probes? Well, first of all, you would have learned at which scales two states that differ very slightly statistically, and now you can see what I mean by statistically. I have this canonical ensemble, and the variance is given the variance in the number of boxes in the excitation level of each of the terminals. and then you can try as explicitly as you can to determine how difficult it is to tell about two geometries in space-time having a quantum state that is fully under control. So typically these differences are of order Planck scale, and then you have basically a set of, let's call it, fuzzy rings, and the level of fuzziness depends on which deviation have you studied. And basically, I guess that I would like to try to conclude this mess saying that in this story model of the one-half BPS sector, which, strictly speaking, we know it's not a black hole, you can, so the question of how do the operators look like, you can work in these phases, you could work in some closed string description in which you are literally working with operators of this type, and you could have, maybe this is not the best basis of operator that you could write down, but you could have certainly asked the same kind of questions, not in the language of the Fermi, but in the language of the trade phrases. And you could have also introduced some kind of, you know, effective canonical example here. What I'm trying to say is that you can characterize the statistical properties of these quantum states in this time model, and thanks to the working in the literature, you can indeed identify that the difference in geometries between two variables. Sorry.
That's
okay.
I'm just not gonna like
pull up
for something. Thanks. Sorry.
No, it's a layer. So I'm just trying to say that we believe that this gives evidence of a much more complicated and a much more engaged topic, which corresponds to the real black hole ideas, and that what we would like to try to make a little bit more progress, a little bit along the lines of trying to answer to Amanda's question, which is, we are trying to associate the difficulty in telling about two quantum states that differ statistically very slightly one from the other, to the fact that there is some sort of universality of correlation functions to the fact that it is the statistics of the operators that are controlling these correlation functions. So if you are not able, if it is very difficult to tell about which these two pure states are, effectively the system is actually responding as if it could be in an X state. And it is in that sense that even though you might believe in the fuzzball picture or you may not, there is, if you want to, there is a, when you ask the question of how easy or how difficult it is to tell apart two different states, effectively you recover this semi-classical picture because of the difficulties of telling apart these different states. So I guess that I would like to conclude here, and if there are other questions, I would be glad to talk about.
I just want to make a comment that why this picture contradicts what you might say contradicts. That was from the co-op work that Dopsity laid, and the argument is so you can take this picture and think that making a grand canonical ensemble who produces the geometry that you might interpret corresponds to equilibrium geometry.
Yeah.
And the next question you would like to ask, is there an independent way of getting this equilibrium geometry?
Yes.
And the most naive approach would be to say, let me take a charged MDS fiber at home,
yes,
where you have a chemical potential.
Right.
You identify a chemical potential there with the temperature in the Fermion picture by BPS condition.
Okay.
And then you say that as you take the temperature, the real temperature in the black hole with the chemical potential, you should get the configuration which corresponds to equilibrium configuration
that
you get in the fermionic
picture.
But that's not the case. That is not the case. So again, it's just, in this case, it's my personal opinion, but I think that is an indication that probably the fermions is nothing but just a mnemonic tool to help us organize this heavy field geometry, but it's very difficult. It's not naively to put dynamics into it or statistical averaging of the
tool. Okay. But do you agree that if you are not willing to give any physical interpretation of this canonical, I mean, it's just a statistical trick in the large end.
But we want to do more. Like, we want to say that's our really important status of the core. They are the guy that will be responsible after some error in writing a wave function that will produce a horizon.
Yeah.
But part of the issue is the time dependence, as you know.
No, it's not. No time dependence is the least.
I know that, but it's only if you have the abac, the second you want, that these things, as you said, are time independent. And so that's a pretty small class of.
No, but that's what you would say. You would say that's actually the argument why you want to concentrate on the reach, because. You would say that you have a spectrum of some Hamiltonian, presumably, just like an ordinary statistical system. And you would say that you want to enumerate all good time independent states, and all time independent states are arbitrary rings.
But are you saying that that's enough?
There is no more time independent states in one half DPSF. So you say that if there is a way you can take the whole integral quaternion theory, put some projector in the path integral of this series, which will project you into half PBS sector, then that's all what you will get, just several M states, and I don't see anything there. But
the question is whether those have anything to do, whether that those states are enough to describe the real black hole. And I think
it's not the real,
the real black hole, certainly.
No, that's definitely the M state flow. And in fact, there are indications that it's not enough to just talk about premios when you move away from an RTPS sector. It's not even enough to say introduce interactions. It is very unfortunate that it turns out that the limit that I'm talking about, and this is what GAPS to be, it corresponds in
the GAPS effect.
Yeah, it's some last chapter. Right. It simply corresponds to a uniform distribution, which is not the distribution that is an obvious equilibrium configuration here with the chemical potential, which is just a temperature in the thermal temperature.
Right.
Any more questions?
I have a question, but I'm not really sure how to express it, but it has to do with the relation between the semi-classical picture and this kind of picture that you're trying to develop. Mm. Really, it would be easiest to say, because you started by saying this has to do with information puzzle and whatever you learned to call it. Normally, that's associated with the evaporation of the black hole.
Yes.
So I'm trying to think how to capture the same puzzle in your context where the black hole doesn't evaporate. And I'm not sure I know how to do it, but the question I'd like to ask is, if you do it, what is supposed to be the resolution?
So, yeah, please.
Yeah, the specific worry that I have is the, in the case of a black hole which forms by collapse, for example, and then in this case it may not radiate away to zero, but it still would radiate somewhat. And that radiation sets up correlations between the putative states of the black hole and quantum near infinity. Mm-hmm. If you don't have those correlations, you couldn't really hope to have a pure state. So maybe one way of expressing the question is your description of the black hole rich enough? Does it include these states near infinity?
So I guess that what I can tell you is that in the ideal scenario, which indeed you reach this equilibrium state with the radiation of the black hole, the attempt to answer your first question of how does the information paradox, if you want to call it like that, gets rephrased in this new scenario, I would say that since I'm trying to push some ideas in the literature that are telling you that black holes, the state of a black hole could be a pure state, then when you think about the process of collapsing a black hole out of some, distribution of matter in ADS, that question I would like to ask you. I mean, in principle, you are going from some pure state to another pure state, so the discussion is very different as in Minkowski's case that you were reminding. But I would like to, one possible question that is still unclear in this pure state case is, well, okay, if you believe that this is the case, since the black hole has an entropy, this means that there is a degeneracy of the states with the same quantum numbers. So this is why I was saying before that the question that I would like to put myself is how difficult it is to tell apart two of these states, because this is actually the information that an asymptotic observer could access for the black hole. So I'm willing to try to formulate the question in those terms. Even if you theoretically know that it's described by a pure state, there is still the issue of how are you going to tell apart which of these pure states in the degeneracy is. So it's an obvious to me how easy that is, and that's part of our motivation to connect with this semi-classical.
I guess to me that doesn't have to do with this information problem, but it's just the question of coming in the state. Can you give an account of the entropy in terms of some sort of microscopic state? So it's the same thing that other Schrödinger and Bauer or other people do. Seems to me like something in that line.
Yeah,
my view is that you don't have unitary evolution, and there are certain things that makes it very difficult to see how you could have a unitary evolution. And I don't see those things playing a role in this discussion. So I don't see how it helps to resolve them.
Well, yeah, my picture is that there is unitary evolution.
That's your picture, but what we want to do is what you should want to do is vindicate that picture against the apparent difficulties that it has.
But we do agree that even though I am unable to do this in the large ABS black hole, if somebody in the literature would be able to account for the entropy of a large ABS black hole, counting states, in my way of looking at the problem, at least I could be completely confused. Even though you have a full quantum description of your system and you are able to account for the entropy of your classical configuration, I still don't know what this distilling with the black hole actually is. So you should, I believe it's an honest question to ask how difficult it is to know what the pure state of your system actually is. But maybe that's the wrong question. This is a question that we ask.
I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying I don't think it addresses this puzzle.
The information puzzle?
Yeah. But we can
correct it. Yeah. This is the way at least in which in ABS I look at the information
puzzle. Well, one last problem. Could you study the Hawking radiation in this picture and see whether you get correlations between the quanta that appear at infinity and the catalog, the set of pure states that you catalog for the black hole? That would begin to address this issue, I think.
I guess that would help, but I'm afraid I actually wouldn't know how to do it. I mean, it's...
very hard question.
Yeah.
Physics is large and strong and coupled gauge theory. I mean, you could ask some of the same questions that you asked about, electromagnetism. And that is our kind of favorite lump of coal analogy, right? Uh-huh. It is hard to tell the state coming out isn't thermal, but if you reconstruct carefully and measure all the photons, you could tell that it's a laser beam in the pure state that you can't pump from coal. You know, it's emulating off remarkably thermal looking.